but before it.
Good. Welcome. Marianne Peabody is co-founder and president of Board Options. And Board Options is an outgrowth of Stible Peabody. We do senior executive career consulting, and so much of that work was involved with boards that we created Board Options. Board Options provides resources to nominating and governance committees of boards in the area of talent management. So the kinds of things Board Options would do would be board of directors self-evaluation, and also retain search for boards. We also have a program called the Board Options Fellows, where very large companies, we're talking about $2-3 billion companies, will hire us to work with internal CEO candidates, help get them on boards of directors, and then groom them on governance so they have an unfair advantage to become the next CEOs. Marianne's an entrepreneur, she's a board member, and she's an organization development consultant. Indeed, a lot of Board Options framework is to look at a board of directors as nothing more than a work group, and that the same concepts of OD that apply in other work settings will also apply at the board level. Marianne received a BS from Hunter College. She also has an RN from Hunter. She was a nurse at Bellevue Hospital in the city of New York. And if you know anything about the city of New York and Bellevue, no, that's real nursing. She designed a home health care program for the city of Boston. Her MBA is from Southern Methodist University in New York, where she was the first recipient of the Hoblitzer Foundation Women in Business Scholarship. She specialized in organization behavior. In addition, Marianne is certified as a leadership coach from Georgetown University. She has advanced training in organization behavior from Columbia University. Marianne's work on governance and leadership has appeared in Directorship Magazine, Harvard Business Review, and MIT Sloan Management Review. She's given talks around the world on leadership, career management, and governance. She's been on the board of a life care center. Is that the
assisted living facility?
She is now the president of Lincolnshire International and chairman of the board. She co-chairs the Educational Initiatives Committee for the New England chapter of the National Association of Corporate Directors and is a former board member of NACD New England. She is referenced in Who's Who of American Women. Thank you. Let me put this on you. And just put that in your giver pocket.
Yep.
Okay. There you go.
Thank you all for coming, and I know Eric heard me speak earlier in the month, and what I said to the attendees there, and I'll say it now, is that many of you know as much or more about the subject than I do. I recognize some of you from NACD, where we also are members, and I know that Tom was talking about having done a board of directors self-evaluation. How many of you have participated in them? Okay, good. So you've had a lot of experience in that. Have any facilitated them as board members? Okay. So what I'm trying to do is just to put some structure around something that we want to have to be more interactive. But what I thought I'd talk about a little bit are the different styles of doing board of directors self-evaluation, and then the different people who conduct it, et cetera. And then hopefully we'll have an interactive dialogue. I'll pass out my cards for all of you so you have them. As Larry said, when we began Board Options in 2000, because of our OD background, we tended to see Board of Directors self-evaluation as a process of continuous improvement, and that's how we talked about it. So most of our companies that contacted us, be they public, private, or not-for-profit, there was no mandate at the time that they had to perform a self-evaluation. They were doing it with an eye towards continuous improvement. And we then, it was before Sarbanes-Oxley, and then so what we did was we took a board of the NACD Good Governance, National Association of Corporate Directors is the national organization of which many of you are members, that has a mission to educate directors on good governance practices. We took their model and used it more in an organizational development fashion, but all of our work was based on their models. Our early clients, again, wanted to improve their corporate governance. And many times they were organizations who had performed assessments before. And they'd call us and they'd say, we just did this assessment. Either they did it themselves using a format that they found, or they had an outside consultant. And we got so much data back, we couldn't handle it all. And so a lot of the time we were being hired to help them evaluate the data that they did have and derive some value out of it. The next thing that happened was the New York Stock Exchange began requiring companies on the New York Stock Exchange to have board of directors self-evaluation. That followed by Sarbanes-Oxley, and now all corporate public company boards do and have to under Sarbanes perform board of directors self-evaluations. Public companies don't have to, but in order to be a good acquisition target or that a public company would want, private companies are also doing board of directors self-evaluation and other things as far as getting their good governance in order. The non-for-profit organizations, again, although they're not under any Sarbanes-like mandate, the Attorney General in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is looking for them to follow good corporate governance practices. So a lot of our...
Massachusetts Charity Navigator and the Better Business Bureau, which are sort of the two rating agencies for non-for-profit.
Mm-hmm. And so they're all following good corporate governance practices as well. So most of the time when we were called in, they had already done one. Some of the time we were called in, they had already done one. And oftentimes what the directors felt when they got, they felt like they were drinking from a fire hose, number one. But number two, they felt that they were told that they weren't up to snuff, they weren't up to par. And so the way that we viewed continuous improvement was to have the board look at where they were and have the board decide where they were going towards in continuous improvement. So there's many common ways to do a board of directors self-evaluation. Some of them are check marks, checklists. And I come from healthcare, and I did quality assurance auditing in healthcare. Now, if you can do quality assurance auditing in healthcare, you can do it anywhere because you've got complicated diseases and people having multiple diseases. So taking that frame of reference in looking at continuous improvement and board of directors self-evaluation, my thinking on a checklist is that directors don't need to fill out a checklist. Anything that's on a checklist should be objective, and I should be able to find it from records, or the chair of the nominating governance committee should be able to find it from records, or the secretary to the board should be able to find it from records. And oftentimes when we were looking at the evaluations that boards had gone through, the directors were checking off things that one could easily find by auditing records. So those are the things I immediately took off, and we have what we use is a checklist in addition to a subjective interview approach. But I just wanted to make sure you had examples, if you haven't seen them, of some of the different styles. This is a brief part of a checklist and this is page one, so the whole thing's not here, but just to give you an idea, that's something that I don't think directors need to waste their time on. And anything that's in an assessment of that ilk, I would pull out, and I wouldn't ask the directors to waste their time doing that. We use a paper audit for those private companies and nonprofit companies who want to do a paper audit, but public companies have to do a self-evaluation every year, and our approach is to take the whole board of directors self-evaluation and break it into three parts done over 3 years. One is to evaluate the board as a whole as it relates to its governance roles as a board. The second year, and in whatever order the company wants to do it, we look at the committee structure, what the committees are doing substantively. And the third year, we'll do individual director evaluation. If you put that all together, you get a lot more information than you can deal with. So the checklist covers that stuff that would make it, if it's a public company, they would have to do that every year anyway, but the board can focus on one portion of the assessment, thereby getting enough information that they can actually do something with it and make improvements over the year, and that they're not overwhelmed by the amount of data that they can, that they get. And so they can make significant change, and they can, and they can see the change over time. The other assessment they often have is using a Likert scale. And there's, NACD has a great book, and they've got lots of different examples. And there's examples from a number of governance agencies on the internet. And this is a Likert scale, and it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And what we find is when people have a choice of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, most people go down the middle and put 3. Then there's usually a box on the side for comments. And if you'll notice, these are two different forms. One form goes from 1 to 5, and the other form goes from 5 to 1. And so what we found with several public companies and Tom's company when they called us in, their situation was they had done an assessment. And they had, I have many pages on this one. Let me just make sure you have them. I gave you a two-page form here, and then two different pages. And what they found, they called us in, they were very confused. They had done the assessment. It was one of these Likert scale boxes. And they said, the comments on the right don't match the numbers. Can you come in and interview all of our directors, ask them these questions, we'll put together some other questions. And by doing so, what we found out was some of the directors thought that 1 was the highest number, and some of the directors thought that 5 was the highest number. And it wasn't easy to tell. So these are a lot of them answered 3. But the comments in the box could have been positive, and the number they gave it was 5, which was actually the lowest number. So I find these a bit confusing, but they are a very common way, a very common way that boards do assessments. Now, there is a company that does these kinds of assessments on the internet, and both Larry and I have some concerns about that, because if you get into a litigation situation, it's always recoverable information. Okay. The other thing that happens is if the company does the assessment and some of the, and it's in the company control, the company has to keep the records for the same length of time that they have their other record retention policy. Okay. So in both of those situations, I think you want to destroy the original documents before, you consolidate it into a report, but you want to destroy the original documents. So if you do it yourself in-house, you can't destroy them, you have to retain them. And the things on the internet scare me because they're always discoverable. So they are secure as far as confidentiality goes, they say, but if you ever got into a legal situation, I'm sure that that would all be discoverable.
Marianne, could you say that again? That's a little slower.
Okay.
Okay. If we use you or an outside source to do the evaluation.
Yep. You could use your outside counsel.
Right. That's what I was trying to say.
So I don't have to.
Outside counsel.
I don't have to follow the policies of the company. My policies are, after I get the data, I destroy the data. I put together a consolidated report. Then I destroy the original data. So. But if the company does it, the company has to keep it for the same amount of time they have to keep their records. And if it's on the internet, that makes me nervous because it's on the internet. Right. This next tool is, it's kind of complicated, but it's an individual director assessment. And they have each director rating Director 1, 2, and 3. So I don't know if Director 4 is rating them or it's Director 1 who's rating Director 2 and 3. And then there's a strongly agree, not sure, disagree, strongly agree, with some questions about the individual directors. Now, Many times boards are okay with doing a board self-evaluation. They're okay with doing a committee self-evaluation. And they get a little uncomfortable when it's individual director assessment. And sometimes the chair of the nominating governance committee goes around and talks to each director to get their feeling on one another. It can become a very political sort of situation. Again, we do it with questions about each director, and each director is asked to rate every other director. And then we use narrative, consolidated data, and we scramble it. Yes.
Self-assessment, that's not required by Stephanie Zofsky, is it? It's not required by law, it's just the best practices.
It's best practices, and the rating agencies are looking at that when they're deciding whether, you know, a company is, that's one of the factors that they look at.
How will they know that it's not? Is that typically publicly disclosed?
I think when they do audits, they ask for, information showing that the company did the assessment. And they may, I don't know how they gather that information, but they have that information as to whether they do the assessment or not do the assessment. So I don't know if they have somebody go in, companies volunteer to be evaluated.
I've never seen that.
Yeah.
Can I just ask a question while you pause for a second?
Mm-hmm.
We are going back to what was said earlier. So the practice that you're saying is most appropriate is have this done, A, by an outside entity, and B, the path to that outside entity is through the council.
It's one way of doing it. I mean, we'll talk about, I have the varieties, who does it, and the different ways of doing it was what I was going to touch on next. You can do it, the board can do it themselves. The Nominating and Governance Committee can do it. If you do an outside, objective, third neutral party person, then there's less political situation. People tend to be more open with the interviewer, if it's an interview. You could have your outside counsel doing it. There's attorney-client privilege with or you could have your in-house counsel do it. Your general counsel could do it. There's attorney-client privilege, but then there's the issue, well, that person reports to the CEO, and there's the political issues and whether the board members will feel confident enough to give honest information. So that's part of in choosing who does it. A lot of boards do their own, and they have their nominating governance committee do it. The third type...
I wasn't really focusing on because you could do it yourself. I was really just trying to focus on the discoverability. If you really...
Discoverability? Yeah. You would use... there's attorney-client privilege if you use your attorney. So even if it's your inside general counsel, there's attorney-client privilege. But if you have your outside counsel, there's definitely attorney-client privilege there. An outside consultant doesn't have attorney-client privilege, but the end result could be a report, and once the original data is destroyed, what's important is that the board has done a self-evaluation, what they learned and what they did with it. And a lot of boards say to me, I don't want the data destroyed. I want everybody to know I did this. we want people to know we're trying to tackle our problems. So it's a decision that each board has to make. I guess we've always come down on the side of destroy the original data. Once you have the report that says this is what, 80% of your directors reported, or this is what's missing, so the report is given to Nominating and Governance Committee, and then that committee deliberates with the board, and then they say, okay, what things are we going to do next? What are we going to tackle first? And if you break down the assessment in pieces, you can really tackle individual issues and work on them and really see improvement over time. If you have to do the whole thing every year, it's a lot because you don't have time to get all the stuff done over time. Eventually, I think boards get to a point where it's just tweaking, but sometimes, sometimes they're not a nominating governance committee, there's no agenda sent out. I mean, there's all kinds of, because we're looking at nonprofits to public companies, so there's a big spectrum here.
Can I just make a comment? An attorney-client privilege, the courts have really cut back
have they?
Attorney-client privilege over, you know, in recent years, so that many courts say, okay, it's privileged if it's in contemplation or preparation for actual litigation. So if you have an exercise here where, well, we're trying to organizationally operate more effectively, that's not litigation.
So you don't think it will hold,
and
okay.
So, you know, you could raise it, but don't bet the ranch that it's
okay.
Going to help.
Okay.
And not just in this context, but in a lot of contexts.
Okay.
So that's something to keep in mind.
That's interesting. Good.
I mean, Marianne, if you've seen situations where these documents have been used in litigation, the reports as a defense, or generally speaking, is it really just a...
It's fairly new, so I don't... does anyone know of any cases like that? I'm just remembering the Disney case where they... where Michael, whatever his name was, Eisner's compensation was being discussed, and they called Sidney Poitier at home, who picked up the telephone, and he couldn't remember. Had they talked about it? I mean, and so, you know, it was that the board was asleep at the switch and really didn't
right.
talk about it. But I haven't seen anything with the documents being...
I think certainly Delaware courts would say, hey, the board is going through an exercise to try to become more deliberative and more effective. It'd be sort of counter to public policy to promote that, to punish them for doing it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, you know,
I'm just sort of...
Well, it's really been more of a defense process.
Yeah.
Like Disney, the board got attacked for... You know,
they
were stamping.
I wonder how much an evaluation record, though, is really going to be a defense when the issue on the table is the board's failure to exercise its duty of care.
Right, exactly.
Those, it seems to me, that defense resides in the board minutes, not
right.
in the evaluation form.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, in this, you know, I was at a Delaware defending the board, and the fact that the board had actually been counseled on what their duties were on a regular, you know, not just, you know, 10 years ago, but, you know, every year or every other year, and that was part of the minutes, or the briefing was part of the minutes, really had a significant impact on the Vice Chancellor in Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
It's more
mm-hmm.
board training news.
Yeah, well, so they were aware of what their
responsibilities were. The board knew what they were supposed to do, and then the minutes... you know, reflected they were deliberative, they were thoughtful, they asked questions, and so that helped protect the board.
Yeah.
Marianne, I took your point to be, and maybe I don't have it correct, well, I took your point to be is that outside third party does it. They deliver a report. The report you have to keep.
Yeah.
And that sort of is the conclusions.
Right.
What I understood the value of destroying the data was that it prevents somebody with an agenda
yes.
to come back and look at the data and come to a different conclusion that is a conclusion,
yeah.
the conclusion is reached in the report.
Or in situations where a board member was suing fellow board members,
yeah.
right? Because particularly if you're doing individual director self-evaluation, or there have been situations of like that. So you...
It's sort of modified in the reports
right.
because it is sensitive.
Right.
And then it becomes... you know, front page Wall Street Journal, you know.
When the Packard board came apart during the acquisition of Compaq, I mean, the board split.
Right.
All right, that's where if somebody could get back to the original data,
right.
it could have gotten really ugly.
Right. And people will, the next kind I was going to talk about was subjective interview data. People will if they feel that they are in a situation where it's safe, what they're discussing is for the purpose of improving the governance, and that it's going to be anonymous and it's not going to be identified to them, people will say exactly what they're thinking. And that's the kind of stuff you
do.
Yeah. And that's how you get a good evaluation. But you don't want that stuff to be something that somebody else can go through. And invariably, I'll be working with boards, and the nominating governance committee will sit around and they'll say, so-and-so said that, so-and-so said that. And I say, you're wrong every time. Just don't even bother. You got it wrong. And what's interesting in the subjective interview is that you can get the the minority view. Oftentimes in the boardroom, people with the minority views will be more reluctant to speak up, or maybe one person will speak up. And so by doing an interview, you really get a sense of the percentage of people that hold a majority view on an issue and the percentage that hold a minority issue. And part of what we look at, or part of what I look at is, you know, if there are a lot of people saying this, even though the CEO and the board itself doesn't want to hear it, it's a strong belief, and it's held by many board members more than they thought. They thought there was one person that had a particular issue, but when you do a subjective interview, you really find out that there may be many more people that share that point of view and just haven't been able or felt comfortable enough bringing it up to the board. Part of what I think it's, the subjective interviewing gets you more qualitative information. It's very important, I think, that in developing the questions, we develop them with the Nominating and Governance Committee. It should be open-ended questions. It shouldn't be leading in a particular direction. What's also important is the person who's compiling and analyzing the data has to be careful not to read into the information. So we do face-to-face interviews. There are boards I've worked with for years, so the people are comfortable with me and I know them. I can then do a phone interview with those people because I know that they're going to be honest, whereas they may not feel comfortable if they've never met me before and I'm a voice at the other end of the phone. So we try to do them in person. But it's important that the interviewer not misconstrue the responses of the directors and read into it. And it's very important to keep asking clarifying questions so you understand the viewpoint of that director. And then we usually put them in trends and stuff like that. But it's very easy for someone to think they're hearing what someone says. Words are not precise. Words have different meanings for all of us. And so it's really important that the interviewer doesn't become part of the problem in the way that they interview. And the directors have to feel confident that they will there will be anonymity. And then what is very important is that when the report is put together, that the information is anonymous and presented in such a way that it can't be identified to a particular person. Oftentimes in interviewing, you'll get quotes, and you have to sort of know, if that person is the only person who talks that way, you have to sort of make sure that that quote doesn't come rushing through in the report, because it puts people in a situation where they may not feel as comfortable. So these are some examples. These are, again, very few examples of the kind of sort of more open-ended kinds of questions, and it really is a function of the Nominating and Governance Committee and what things they think are important to learn, and also sometimes the board chair has some things, but please describe how board meetings are run. It's pretty open-ended. You could say, or comment on your board meetings, comment on your executive sessions. Please describe the board's decision-making process. It's a neutral question, and it brings lots of different responses. How would you describe your influence on this board? Please comment on board staff relations. So we tend to use the word comment a lot. I think it's less. What things could improve effectiveness of other directors? And my favorite question, and it's in every interview that we do, is there anything else you want to tell us? Then you get all kinds of information, and the important thing is then to be able to sort that information, because people will tell you what's really on their mind, what they think the board has to do, what they think is at risk, and particularly in the area of risk management, that's where people bring up a lot of those issues with that kind of a subjective kind of question. So we were talking before about who does the assessments, and I think what's important is that assessments are being done, as Dan was saying. I was really glad to hear you say that that there isn't that much attorney-client privilege. I heard that from attorneys for the most part, so it was good for you to hear that courts are changing their view of that. And I agree with you and the boards, a lot of the boards that we work with, who say you know, we want people to know we're working on it. We want to have a trail that we've done it. You know, we want a report. But again, I don't want to leave the original data. So generally, the Board of Directors self-evaluation is under the auspices of the Nominating and Governance Committee. Sometimes the board chair takes it on, but more often than not, it's a Nominating and Governance Committee. And sometimes it's the committee chair from the Nominating and Governance Committee who will, if it is interviews, the checklists and all, everybody gets and everybody can fill out. Again, I think with the checklists, it shouldn't be too onerous. It shouldn't have too much data in it. And and I don't think it should be on the internet just because although it's easier, I think it's just too discoverable, and I would get rid of the original checklists before the report is done. Sometimes, if the Nominating Governance Committee members or the chair, the people that are doing the self-evaluation, that in itself can inhibit directors, because the Nominating Governance Committee are the people who decide who's going to be reappointed, and at the end of their term, not speaking of term limits, but the end of one each term, the Nominating and Governance Committee should be looking at should that person re-up or be chosen to be re-upped for that term. So there's always a risk that if you have a minority viewpoint or there's political interactions on the board, that people may not feel open in communicating in that situation. It really depends on the board that you're a member of. Sometimes the general counsel, again, is the person who does it. And again, because the general counsel usually works for the CEO, sometimes that can inhibit people's responses. You really have to know the board, you have to know the organization, and you have to know if it's a political or an apolitical organization, and how comfortable people are speaking up. And if it's an environment where everybody's free to speak their mind, then that's fine, because people won't be intimidated to do so. But if it's different from that, it's probably better to have someone on the outside do it. So the outside counsel can do it, or an outside consultant as a neutral party. And then again, when the report is done, it should be the original data that was collected, we think, should be destroyed. And being an outside party, the outside party does not have to keep to the same retention records as the company does. So just want to open it up for more discussion and thoughts and instances where you've had good situations with evaluations, some that were problematic.
Okay, well, as you said, I've been on two public company boards and one nonprofit board, and we've always done self-evaluations. And in most cases, as I remember, okay, it was all anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important. And the result of the evaluations, I think, led to better governance. I'll give you some examples, okay? For example, in most cases, the directors wanted more input in setting the agenda,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I think is a reasonable request. And instead of having the CEO or the chairman of the board set the agenda, if you have something as a director, risk management, for example, and you want that on the agenda, he now would have that ability to do that. Everybody agreed, okay? Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. The other thing that came up, for example, was the minutes are too detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get minutes that are too detailed, then that leads to, you know, people saying, well, you know, we shouldn't have put this in the minutes because that's for the record and da-da-da-da-da, and legal counsel agreed to that, and so we reduced the length of the minutes. Another one was that the audit committee meetings were too long. I remember the first audit committee I went to in a public company, it was 10 hours long. Because we had to interview three firms because we were, you know, rotating. And then after that, we had the audit committee, we had lunch, we had dinner, you know, went till 10 o'clock, blah, blah, blah. But that was an exception. However, the meetings kept going on, and you would expect under Sarbanes-Oxley when it first came out that the meetings wouldn't be long, but 5-6 hours,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of repeated itself. And so the audit chairman said, "You know what? You're right. You know, I'll do da 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 da. You know, mm-hmm. cut it down." So those are some of the things that I ran across in my director experience. Okay. It really were, I think, good things that came mm-hmm. out,
came
out as a result of the
evaluation. It reminded me of a story of a board that we were working with, and they didn't. The nominating governance committee. Wanted to do stuff with good governance, and they were kind of afraid to approach it. So they asked us to interview board members. They wanted 2 new board members, and they had specific criteria they were looking for. And it was a defense company board, and they wanted more minorities and more women on the board, et cetera. But in interviewing all the directors about who they thought might be good for the board or what kind of qualities they were looking for, they asked us to ask some governance questions. So we put together a few governance questions. And so the nominating and governance committee were afraid of where they were heading with this whole thing. Well, to a person, everybody we interviewed, they were on other boards. So everybody knew that this board was not acting the way a board should act. And everyone knew that they had great governance problems. And so what we were able to come back with was, you know, you're not alone. You're not out there because they're all behind you. And it really made this board begin to look at the fact that everybody was on board and everybody knew that they needed to make some changes. Yeah.
I have 2 favorite stories about board self-evaluation. One was not something that we did, but it was a story told to me. And that was during, you know, the early days of Sarbanes-Oxley. Remember how things were, where boards were really freaked out. And there's some balance between advice and counsel to the CEO versus audit and oversight. The board had really swung towards the audit and oversight side. And during the board self-evaluation, the board gave the CEO an opportunity to evaluate the board. And he evaluated the board as not being very helpful to him. And he missed the opportunities for advice and counsel. And so the board said, okay, why don't we do the following? The default that we have is we're in an audit oversight mode because of Sarbanes-Oxley. But whenever you tell us, I have a wild and crazy idea, we're going to put our Sarbanes-Oxley hat to the side, and we'll be your advisory board. My other favorite story was an assignment that we did for a company that's in the Bruce's Bruce is on a board in this sector. This is a company in the defense industry. I mean, very in the defense industry. There's admirals, there's generals, there's secretary of defense, there's a former CIA director on this board. And they had been with each other like for 5 or 6 years, and they had developed this routine. And then they finally decided to do board self-evaluation. And part of the routine was the CEO would bring his direct reports into the board meetings and his idea was, if you're going to understand things from a board point of view, why don't you attend board meetings? And also, if a director has a question about finance, I'll ask the CFO to ask. All of that was well and good. The problem is, this is a very military culture. And in a military culture, for those of you who have ever been in the military, you know, you do not dress down a boss in front of his subordinates. And so, reflexively, the board had gotten into the culture of just going, nice, very interesting. And it was all dog and pony show. And everybody was terribly bored with the whole process. And the board self-evaluation government sort of critically reviewed this and said, you know, we're wasting our time here. And so the CEO stopped bringing his subordinates, and the board started being more open to the CEO about what they really thought.
What I'm thinking about is diversity. And I think about diversity both in terms of style and diversity in terms of approach, ideas, content diversity, which in my opinion at least are both of those. Style and content diversity are very important on a board. And I'm wondering how you go about evaluating whether that is present mm-hmm. a constructive way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it could also be in a destructive way if it's not handled properly. So I'm kind of wondering how you actually deal with that.
It's an interesting question, because the only the kinds of questions that we've asked have been, does the board have the kind of diversity you would seek? How is the board doing on the diversity factor? And people talked about minorities, but then they mostly got into differences of opinions, different styles, and so they brought it up naturally. But yes, you could ask a question that looked at, well, one of the things is one of the questions we ask is describe the board's deliberation and decision-making process. So a lot of times that brings that kind of stuff up too. But I think the key is how you craft your questions and how you'd want to ask them. And maybe diversity in the broadest sense. And then one board did minorities, gender, geographic, and opinion or communication style. There was one board we worked with who absolutely, when we talked about the individual director assessment, talked about there were quiet board members, and the entire board felt that some of them were talking too much, and so the people who were more vocal had got to say their point once and stop, and that the people who were quiet had to, and we sit down with each individual director, they have to get their opinions on the table, and I would advise them to just get out there first, because they were the ones that would hang back. Everyone else would give their opinion, and their opinion would never get on the table. And then the board chair decided he was going to call on the quiet people first. And so this year we did the assessment. The feedback was now the people that take up too much airspace, say their piece, they stop, and we hear much more from the quiet people. And the board itself felt that it wasn't getting the value of all the people that it had on the board because of those dynamics. That was interesting.
If you're talking about a subject like this, and many others are the same, where there's a continuum, there's no right or wrong place to be, mm-hmm. necessarily, but I'm trying to visualize how you come back. When you come back to the board with your report, mm-hmm. are you overlaying value judgments about more of this or less of that, or what do you actually come back with?
What we come back with is we take all the responses and we do trends, and then we identify the number of people that have hit on a theme. We look at the total board, the percentage of people who said X, Y, and Z, and we have graphs. And then we use quotes, direct quotes from people in the text on the report as well. And again, that's where we have to be careful that it's not how somebody talks all the time. And I ask people to kind of highlight for me as they're talking to me if they think that there's something that if they say it, everyone will know it came from them. So we do charts. So 80% of the board said this, and that's really surprising. Even if you have 50% or more saying one thing, it's a surprising amount of people that brought up issues that, you know, weren't necessarily what we were looking for. We had open-ended questions, but those were the themes that came up. So we try to make it really objective. We have a statistician who does all our charts.
Second rule of the timekeeper. It's going to be 6 o'clock in 5 minutes. It appears that there's going to be another group that's going to be using this room. So we'll have to stop at 6, but we mm-hmm. can continue the discussion with the...
There's a cafeteria outside if people want to talk. Stuff. Yeah.
And, you know, another avenue, too, is the executive session, because usually the board of chairman of the board leaves because he's a part of the management team. And that's an area where you can really, as a group, mm-hmm. as a board group, assess the chairman of the board plus his management team. And I think boards that don't have executive sessions, it's a mm-hmm. real shortfall.
And I'm seeing executive sessions at committee meetings. Does anybody have that? Yeah. Yeah, I'm seeing more of that. Committee meetings as well as the board meeting.
I also have found an interesting trend, and that is boards are interested in getting younger people. I'm talking about people in their 40s on boards. Having board self-evaluation is a positive attraction, because these young folks often sort of say, I don't have a lot of time, and I'm going to devote my time, whether it's for-profit or non-profit. I want to see that you're serious. And board self-evaluation is one way to show a young person that this board is really serious. I don't find that people who are older, let's say they're 50s, 60s, have that same attitude. But younger people definitely do it. It's very positive. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
what happens when the board self-evaluation is very positive, and yet if you sort of benchmark it against sort of reality, even though the group felt, oh, we have to communicate with this and this and that, but you look at them and say they're not a very effective board. I joined a board of a public company that they all thought they were great sort of board members.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I first joined, after the board meetings, you know, dismissed to a conference room nearby, and they would wheel in a cart, which had basically a full bar. And it was like a scene out of Mad Men.
Yeah.
It was like something out of 50. The board was...
Girls didn't come with
it. Yeah. The board was all middle-aged white men.
Yeah.
And they thought they were doing a great job.
Yeah.
What do you do when you've got this thing that's sort of completely disconnected from reality?
I have not had that situation. I have a situation that was... I'm interviewing with them, and the CEO thinks that's how the board sees themselves. I think if you use a checklist, it's easier for people to just put stuff down. I think if you ask questions, what you're looking for is body language, and if you just sit there and are quiet for a while, some of the stuff will come out. I mean, if everybody's deluding themselves and they think they're terrific, and you think, then some of the things that need to be more substantive, or part of, do they have executive sessions, some of the things you can find on audit or even checklist, do they follow good practices is a way to go. If they're following good practices, they're at least moving in the right direction. But what you're talking about is the qualitative difference. And I think it's crafting questions that are going to have people think. And what my experience has been is that most people who are answering have really been really thoughtful about what they're saying. And so people will say, well, one of the questions we often say is, compare this board to other boards you're on and comment. And then people will say, when you use that kind of a question, well, you know, it's the best board I'm on. Or they'll say, gosh, we don't do half of the things we're supposed to be doing. I'm on some other boards, and we always have executive sessions, and everybody gets to speak. Here, we don't have any input into the agenda, the chair. So I think depending on how you ask the questions.
I have a slightly different take on that, and that is I can see where you're coming from. Because if you have a board that's composed of people from a similar demographic, white middle-aged guys, they went to very similar schools, very similar backgrounds. I see there's a lot of credit unions where people are extraordinarily comfortable. They get into this kind of routine that they're very comfortable with. And so it becomes a very comfortable group. It's a lousy problem-solving group. It's an emotionally comfortable one where nobody's going to step out of line. And I think the research is pretty clear, and that is when you have kind of people who are from similar backgrounds, similar perspectives, it's lousy problems. Mm-hmm. And you really need to sort of structure the diversity of perspectives, maybe sex, maybe race, maybe age, but shake it up.
Okay.
The problem you describe when you're on that board is a very tough problem.
It's frustrating.
And particularly because you know better.
Yeah.
And I've found myself in that kind of a position. And I think the only way out is, first of all, hopefully the chairman and the chief executive are two different people. And if they are, that's at least a beginning. Secondly,
It's the divide and conquer strategy. I think you find a director who, after observation, looks like he might be of like mind, and have a quiet discussion. And then you've got, you're not alone anymore. And then maybe you have another discussion with another director, and you're not alone anymore.
Right.
And it doesn't take very many of those kinds of quiet discussions to sort of get people's sensitivities aroused to the point where there may be some real salvage in it. But it is very tricky stuff.
And the key is, who is the nominating and governance chair? So if there's anybody, there's a flicker of, gee, we need to do something different, that person can really drive it.
That's interesting. So rather than sort of feel like that out person out, mm-hmm. take on the whole group, you're saying sort of find an ally.
Absolutely. Divide and conquer. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can do it in a general session, number one.
You're
way too exposed, mm-hmm. particularly if you're new. I mean, boards have cultures, and it takes some time, I think, to analyze and understand the culture that you're dealing with. And you seem to have done that particularly well. But now the next thing is where the job gets very hard. And we all know that changing culture is about the hardest thing you can do. And I think you take it a bite at a time, and I think you take it an individual at a time if you are to ultimately prevail.
Interesting. Divide and conquer. Back to Larry's point is, maybe start with someone who knows better. Right. They're on several boards.
Yes.
They know the difference. Back to your comment.
They know the difference
of what's right and wrong.
Yeah.
And it is too comfortable.
Yeah.
We're not accomplishing what we should do.
To Larry's point, there was a credit union board that the board decided they wanted self-evaluation, and I went in to talk with some of the board members and the CEO. And this was a board where everybody was alike that was on the board, which was one of the problems the CEO raised. But they had no term limits. They had a retirement age, and they had a committee meeting at which the CEO was not present, and they rescinded their retirement age. they were going to be that way forever. But they were the ones who brought up, well, maybe we should do self-evaluation. Now, what their motivation is or was, or there are probably some people who know. They're on other boards. They're smart people, so they know it's not right. Yeah.
Well, I agree very much with the comments you were making about how to go about the divide and conquer part. But I would add to it the one another thing you might do in that context is to try to get some factual data that's not arguable, the stuff that you were saying you can get out of the minutes,
mm-hmm.
and present that and compare that to best practices. You have to sort of pick your spots and try to figure out what you want to talk about. But if some people aren't making all the meetings, or if some of the stuff that should be getting covered isn't getting covered, you have to sort of figure out what it is. But the key is that it's hard data, it can't be argued with, and it's not fitting best practices. And just point out and say, we can do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
We may have to stop now, but we can continue the discussion outside.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Marianne wrote a piece
for MIT Sloan Management Review on board self-evaluation. If any of you want a copy of that, just give Marianne your business card.
This is a sample of the NACD one on improving director effectiveness board evaluation. They've come out with a newer version. And for those of you who are members of NACD, you can get it online from them as well.
Thank
you,
Marianne.
Great. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I think she got some.
I do. I think so. If you have another one, I'll take it. I know I have your contact information. Great. Thank you. Great.
Thank you.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Thank you all.
I want to just give you my card so you can send me a copy of that form report.
Great, really definitely.
Really
thank you.
Good job. I really enjoyed it very much.
Thank you. Good audience.
Good,
all the people who know what they were talking about. So.
It's kind of a part of the group. Smart people.
Appreciate
it. So.
Great. Good.
Thank you very much.
So you're going to be looking for public content and some public
Comments. Right. I'm very excited and interested in the stuff I'm doing in children's. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, right.
But I've done not-for-profit stuff my whole life. And, when I was with Boston Private, I was on the Holy Trinity board, and I was on the board of our independent affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt that, one, I contributed, but two, I enjoyed it.
Right.
That's what I've spent my whole life doing, and that's what I like to do.
Yeah.
So,
now's the time to do it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
now, we have our board of directors talent bank on our website. It's mostly private companies that use it, I must say.
Yeah.
But the NACD has a... Are you a national member?
I am a member of that, yes. I'm a member of the
New England chapter. Yeah. So they've got a talent resource group here, but National also has one.
Okay.
So if you're a member, you're a member of National.
Okay.
So you might want to look at that as well. I think the local one will bring mostly local companies, which may be what you want, but we don't have as many public companies as we used to.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
No, I'm just getting myself organized, and it seems like it's my bio entry. I'll move a copy for your talent bank.
Oh, absolutely.
And then I'll post it.
Great.
Both the local finance team and the national.
Right. Good. I think that's a good thing.
Are you familiar with the board leaders group? This is a group that I've been a part of for the past 3 or 4 years. It meets out at the BAPS Executive Center.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And very similar to the Corporate Directors Group.
Okay.
It's run by people that are on board.
Yep.
They have people like Bob Posner, for instance, board. He's just written a book about board management, that sort of thing. And so they have top-notch teachers. They have really good people there. So I mean, if you're interested, I can invite you or whatever.
I'd love to attend. A lot of times. Yeah, I'm not a director of a public company, and a lot of the groups are looking for directors of public company, but I'd love to go and hear a speaker, et cetera.
Well, I can, I'll do two things. I'll send you, I'll look at their website and see if that's got information that's helpful and interesting, so I'll send you a link.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'll send you a schedule of some of the meetings, and if you're interested in attending, I'll invite you to my desk.
I would like to do that. That'd be great. Thank you. And did you get a copy of my card?
Yes.
You did. Okay. The question I had for you is, I'm working with a group. It's a physician group. Okay. They're not in one single practice, but it's a group.
Right.
They didn't even know they were a board. Okay. They didn't know that they owned an entity.
Right.
So they're I'm amazed. They're really doing really well.
Yeah.
But they have some financial kinds of issues that they were not aware of that are being brought to their attention.
Yeah.
And I had told them, I started working with them in April, and already now they have they really are active. They've got the committees. That they might want to think about changing their bylaws to have some finance people. They would need somebody who understood healthcare, but they need somebody to look out for them. They don't. They're all physicians.
Yeah.
They don't understand that. So would there be anybody? I know that's not what you're looking for, but who would understand the healthcare systems? I mean, they have to deal with a hospital that's a behemoth and bigger than them. And
our CFO at Children's Hospital, either himself or would be able to put a
somebody on. Yeah.
That could do a great job with them because, Children's Hospital has a physicians organization.
Yeah, we've done work with them. They're a client of ours.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah, it is exactly the same thing. It's exactly the same thing.
You would know the people better than I that are close to the situation. But there's no question that we could get them some financial
Support. And we need somebody that would not be in conflict and that that would not be in conflict. Yeah. You know, they wouldn't know the same people, so it would work. Yeah. That would be great.
No, I'd be happy to introduce you to David Kirshner at the Children's Hospital.
Great.
Or, have a phone conference or whatever you want to do.
Okay, great. That would be good. Because I know that they don't know what they're looking at when they look at the financials, and they put together a finance committee. I suggested that they get some outside people to be on the committee, even though they're not board members, to advise them.
Yeah. No, that's pretty important. I mean, the problem with many organizations is that they simply don't know how to value the stuff that they don't know. And so they don't understand the importance of the administrative, tasks often enough. And they can easily get into trouble without realizing they've done it. And without, no intent.
That's exactly right.
Just lack of knowledge that gets them into trouble.
Great. That would be good because that would be helpful for them. I know they need it.
Very good.
And the chairman of the Nominating Governance Committee sent me an email the day after Thanksgiving that said, you talked about, and I know they had an executive session about finance stuff. I wasn't in on that. I know you talked about changing the bylaws. Let's meet and talk about what some of your ideas are. I think we have to move forward with some of that. Yeah. And I think she was talking about needing some more financial help.
Well, there's the head of the physicians committee at Children's who sits on the finance committee as well. I can't think of his name right offhand. Dr. Paul something. But, a guy like that could be very helpful too.
Yeah.
Because he's not a financial guy, but he's dealt with
problems. Yeah.
So he might be.
And some of the physicians with MBAs, they actually put two members on their board this year who have MBAs because of that situation.
That's
really good. So that's good. Great. Good. Well, thank you for attending. It's a great group.
That's probably not after kids and wife
too. So thank you for sending it out to us. So you'll have a lot of fun. Remember, these are 18-year-olds.
I've
got two kids in college, so
They call me a
zip car, right?
Zip car. Zip car
kids. And it's very strange in the sense there's two kinds.